From Brennan to the Boca Chiel, from Lamy to La Push, and from the lordly Sawduck to lovely Duckabush. From Samish to Sammamish, Suquamish to Quilicene, the climate is so friendly, it's a land that's evergreen.
Hello, and welcome to the History of the Evergreen State podcast. I'm your host, John C., and thank you for joining me today for episode 96, Woodinville's Hollywood Farm. East of Seattle, in a region long inhabited by the Sammamish people, coal was first discovered in 1859. This region was known locally as Squawk Sioux in southern Lachute Seed. The mining location was named Squawk Mountain by newly arrived residents and miners who then used it to name the new town of Issaquah after additional modification. Until being renamed Sammamish Slough in the early 1900s, the 14-mile outlet river from nearby Lake Sammamish to Lake Washington was known as Squawk Slough or River. The slough leaves the north end of Lake Sammamish and travels through Redmond before winding through Woodinville and Bothell before turning west and traveling through Kenmore before entering Lake Washington close to its northern end. Ira and Susan Wooden established a town on a bank along the slough's farthest northeastern bend in 1871. The Seattle Lakeshore and Eastern Railway arrived in the basin in 1887 on its way to the coal mines in Issaquah, and the Woodinville Junction Railroad Depot then witnessed ever-increasing numbers of newcomers arriving to homestead farms and or work in the area's timber industry. This river community of Woodinville is located about 20 miles northeast of Seattle. A second community was eventually established along the slough, about 2 miles southeast of the original Woodinville settlement, roughly where Northeast 145th Street today crosses the Sammamish River, as there were eventually enough people in the region. A small timber-based crossroads town with a shop, dance hall, and a rail depot as its main buildings, Derby was possibly named by a British family with a nearby logging enterprise. The Wooden Derby School would be built in 1892. Derby was established on fertile bottomland that was close to a hillside to the west. The Beltline of the Northern Pacific Railroad was constructed at the foot of that hill, and the North Bend branch of the Northern Pacific ran almost parallel and a little to the east. The intrepid Lund family held a sizable tract of logged-over stump land between these two lines, approximately south of present-day Northeast 145th Street. A couple of newcomers named Stimson would subsequently become interested in this parcel, which finally led to the neighborhood being given the new moniker Hollywood. One of the most prominent lumbermen in the Great Lakes region, Tom Douglas T.D. Stimson, ran a sizable enterprise that included a sawmill in Chicago. He conducted a scouting expedition to the west to investigate the timber conditions there as the local sources of lumber started to dry up all over the Midwest. He was extremely impressed by the old-growth forests of the Pacific Northwest and by the deep-water port of the still-rising metropolis of Seattle. T.D. dispatched his sons west to start purchasing forested land, begin logging operations, and establishing a mill. Early in 1889, C.D. and his wife Harriet, along with Fred and his bride Nellie, all came west to Seattle. The Stimson firm was quickly reorganized and established. Timberlands were purchased in the Hood Canal area, Snohomish County, and as far south as Oregon's Tillamook region. Shortly after the brothers arrived in Seattle, the Stimson Land Company, focused primarily on the Evergreen State, was established, and C.D. started looking for a potential location to build a sawmill. He was attracted by the availability of a sawmill owned by Captain William R. Ballard and situated a short distance north on Salmon Bay, and he quickly purchased it due to the fact that downtown waterfront real estate was already quite pricey given the large needs of the firm. The Great Seattle Fire broke out shortly after on the 6th of June, 1889, and the mill immediately saw a massive unforeseen demand. If you'd like to learn more about this great conflagration, check out episodes 54 and 56. Anyways, incorporated in January of 1890, the Stimson Mill Company was run by C.D., with Frederick in charge of shipping. The mill quickly began sawing as much lumber as it could to serve the Klondike Gold Rush, and eventually developed into the greatest manufacturer of cedar roofing shingles in the entire globe. A number of mills and sizable timber holdings in four states were added to the Stimson Empire as it expanded. The family's property holdings were said to be the greatest on the Pacific coast, with it being estimated that they had enough timber in sight to keep their mills working for the next 25 years. And the mills had a daily production capacity of about 125,000 board feet. The Stimsons had a good life. They had worked hard and increased their fortune over time. The Stimson brothers were among the city's first motor vehicle owners, and together with their wives, they constructed two of the grandest mansions in the city of Seattle. C.D. and Harriet Stimson's Stimson Green Mansion at 1204 Minor Avenue on First Hill and Frederick and Nellie Stimson's Stimson Griffiths Mansion at 405 West Highland Drive on Queen Anne Hill. The Stimson Green Mansion on Minor Avenue was designed by renowned Spokane architect Kirtland Cutter and would be completed in 1901. The mansion's varied architectural styles, which also included elements of Moorish, Romanesque, neoclassical, and Renaissance architecture. The Stimsons and their children, Tom and Dorothy, resided in the house for more than a decade. Joshua Green, a Seattle merchant, and his wife Laura bought the house in 1915 after the Stimsons relocated to a bigger mansion in the Highlands in 1914. The Green family lived at 1204, as they dubbed it, for the next 6 decades while raising their 3 children, hosting relatives, friends, and business acquaintances, and making only minor alterations to the ornate interior of the building. The Washington Trust is now the owner and guardian of one of Seattle's most important residential landmarks, thanks to Patsy Bullitt Collins' kind donation of the Stimson Green Mansion in 2001. The Washington Trust is happy to provide frequent mansion tours, of which you can bet I'll be going on in the near future. It can also be rented for a variety of purposes as well. During its 13 years in business, from 1901 until around 1914, the firm of Bebb and Mendel created a large number of homes for Seattle's economic elite, with the Frederick and Nellie Stimson House being one of the more noteworthy in the Queen Anne area. By 1905, the family would be able to move into the house that had been built for them beginning in 1903. Up until Frederick Stimson's death in 1921, the family resided there with their large team of domestic help. Nellie Stimson then relocated to an apartment on Broadway by the end of the 20s. In 1928, Captain James Griffiths made the mansion his home. Griffiths' activities in import-export shipping to Japan and the rest of Asia helped him become quite wealthy. He also ran the Coastwise Steamship and Barge Company and rose to prominence in the neighborhood's yachting community as a result. The size, decorative details, and the setting, with its expansive vistas of this Tudor Revival-style home, were all suitable for the preferences and aspirations of a multimillionaire. The Stimson House was described as a ponderous, heavy, half-timbered construction with a large cut granite ground floor, undoubtedly evocative of wealthy and social standing, by Sally Woodbridge and Roger Montgomery in a 1980 article. The word ponderous may be overly harsh when applied to this house because of its modest size and light adornment. Many of the white upper-class residents of Seattle at the time selected half-timbered Tudor Revival homes as a symbol of their ties to antecedent English cultural traditions. Around the middle of the 1910s, when there was a lot of stylistic variety, wealthy residents in the city started to favor the Tudor style for their homes. The mansion has since been added to the National Register of Historic Places. A sizable parcel in Derby was one of the many homes that C.D. and Frederick Stimson bought. It was logged over stump land beside the Squawk Slough that had been purchased from the Lunns, where willow trees had started to repopulate. Although Steedy Stimson eventually had a formal structure erected there, his lodge, The Willows, which by 1906 also featured a small poultry farm, the Stimson brothers originally intended it as a campground for duck shooting and fishing trips with their friends and business partners. After riding the ferry from Madison Park to Kirkland across Lake Washington, Steedy and his young family found the Willows Shooting Club to be a good weekend getaway location. In 1915, when the renowned illusionist and stunt performer Harry Houdini was in Seattle for a few performances at the Orpheum Theater, C.D. also welcomed him and other notable guests. King County purchased the Willows property in 1916, and from that time until 1932, it was home to what was called the Lazy Husband's Farm, a labor camp where inmates were paid little wages that were sent to their suffering families. The old lodge burned down in August of 1939, and the land was turned into a dairy. Around 1910, Frederick and Nellie Stimson came to the conclusion that they would prefer a rural lifestyle over living in the hustle and bustle that Seattle was quickly heading towards. Also, they had become quite fond of the Squawk Slough property and reportedly came to terms with C.D. to acquire the northern 206-acre section of it. Frederick wanted to build a formal manor house encircled by a completely built estate, but the land needed a lot of work first. Stimson reportedly employed up to 100 people to assist him in the removal of stumps from his fields before starting to construct a craftsman-style home with 6 bedrooms, 4 fireplaces made of river rock, a comfortable sunroom, and 4 rooms for servants. When the estate was finally completed in 1911, it included exquisitely landscaped gardens, a 5-tier trout pond, numerous wandering pet peacocks, a laundry, lit tennis courts, Nellie's small greenhouse, a caretaker's cottage, and a sizable 4-car carriage house, with chauffeur's apartment to store Fred's expanding collection of vehicles, which included an early all-electric vehicle. The Stimsons christened the estate Hollywood, and the entire perimeter, including the gated driveway known as Stimson Lane, was lined with more than 1,000 holly trees, hence the name Hollywood. The couple had everything they could possibly need at this time and divided their time between the new rural estate and Seattle, where they had purchased a lovely apartment in the Hamilton Arms at 553 Broadway North on Capitol Hill. According to the Seattle Times, Fred Stimson had chosen a location next to a magnificent road that leads directly to Seattle's downtown and would make the city accessible at any time he would want to go. He refers to it as being 45 minutes from Broadway because a quickly driven car can go that distance between Hollywood and Seattle's Broadway in approximately that amount of time. Good luck attempting to make that same drive today. You'd be lucky to get from point A to point B within an hour, even with minimal traffic. Although the Stimsons intended Hollywood to be a remote hideaway, the 600 acres of land that they eventually added to the property appeared to beg to be put to good use. Fred Stimson, through a physician friend, had grown interested in offering the public superior hygienic milk and had started to arrange a sizable farm expansion designed to fully utilize the most cutting-edge scientific operational techniques accessible. The farm, though, was more than simply an expensive luxury. The return on investment for the firm increased quickly after the dairy started producing commercially. Stimson joined the Holstein-Friesian Dairymen's Association in 1911, which allowed him to advocate for better working practices personally and talk about improvements with other farmers. Among them was his friend James W. Kleiss, who started building his Willowmore Farm in neighboring Redmond in 1904. It ultimately became Marymore Farm and later Marymore Park. If you'd like to learn more about the history of Marymore Park, let me know. I've been debating this topic for a while. I've seen many a summer concert there over the years, and have always been interested in its history. Anyways, soon after assembling 300 head of purebred Holstein cattle, Stimson started shipping the calves to other ranches as a new revenue stream. With its own laboratory, feed silos, carpenter shop, workers' bunkhouse and cookhouse, and a steam power plant to heat enormous new barns, Stimson spared no expense in transforming his farm into a high-tech agricultural demonstration project. In order to make the best, purest milk accessible to consumers, he built an innovative, modern dairy that utilized scientific methods of management, severe quality standards, and direct marketing approaches. The milk was subjected to daily lab testing, the milking crewmen donned white uniforms and caps that were replaced twice daily, bottles were washed in a mechanized machine, and each cow received a hot scrub bath prior to each milking session. For the first several years, dairy products would be sold directly from the farm. Together with the dairy, Stimson also started making and selling pork sausage, as well as raising pigs, including 400 highly regarded Duroc jerseys. In other words, what had begun as the construction of a dreamy rural retreat had changed into an industrial complex. Stimson, the richest man around for miles, was committed to the idea, so he got the railroad and postal office to agree to altering the name Derby to Hollywood. The Hollywood Schoolhouse was the name given to the new brick structure that Stimson funded in 1912 in order to replace the previous wooden Derby School. Press coverage of and public interest in Hollywood Farm were both quite significant for the time. The Seattle Times ran a significant article in 1912 titled Cows and Carnations, F.S. Stimson's Beautiful Sammamish Valley Dairy Greenhouse Country Home Ranch, a fantastic toy and an excellent company with real economic value. In 1913 and again in 1916, Asahel Curtis, a well-known Seattle photographer and my personal favorite, though I do wish I knew how to properly pronounce his name, made multiple visits to capture pictures of the business. Ella E. McBride, a well-known fine art photographer who served as store manager for Edward S. Curtis, Curtis's more well-known brother, did as well. Due to the rise in visitors, an ice cream shop was constructed close to the rail terminal on the farm's northern boundary, where city residents could stop by to buy fresh milk, cream, ice cream, and sausages. Then shortly after that, eggs were offered as well. In 1913, Stimson formed a new collaboration with Morton E. Atkinson, an old classmate who had grown into an accomplished but cash-strapped chicken farmer. In exchange for a small income and an additional 50% of any earnings, Atkinson agreed to reimburse Stimson for the capital expenses incurred in building the facility. The hard work began after Atkinson arrived with his tools and stock of 800 pedigree SC White Leghorn and 300 Orpington chicks. Stimson built 15 brooder buildings, 2 incubator houses, and 5 laying houses for the Hollywood Poultry Farm project on 17 acres just to the west atop Hollywood Hill. An instant hit, the poultry operation swiftly expanded to 47 acres and generated an income of more than $100,000 per year, all the while Atkinson was clearing out his obligation to Stimson. Along the way, Atkinson demonstrated his apt abilities, eventually rising to national and then international recognition for curating a special strain of Hollywood hens that consistently took first place in egg-laying competitions. When the flock of the Hollywood poultry farm reached 12,000 birds, some of the coveted Hollywood hens were eventually sold to other poultry producers all over the world. But the farm's most cherished individual hens were treasured as the resident stars that they were, including one legendary champion, Lady Hollywood, who had broken world egg-laying records. Hollywood Farm may have started out like other farms of the time, as farm estates were a fashionable distraction for wealthy industrialists in the early 20th century, but it quickly caught Fred Stimson's attention and turned into his main source of income. Using the Kirkland to Seattle ferry service across Lake Washington, Hollywood Farm started delivering milk to Seattle consumers in 1914 using a horse and wagon. The Stimsons then grew their direct-to-consumer business by building a new retail location in Seattle in 1916. At 1609 Westlake Avenue on Lake Union, the Hollywood Farm City Store and Manufacturing Facility, which was highly successful, received daily wagon loads of fresh goods. In 1918, Stimson abandoned most of his other business interests due to deteriorating health and moved his permanent residence to the farm on the recommendation of a doctor who suggested that living in the country could be better for his health problems. The next year, Stimson wrote about the store in a history of the farm that was published. He wrote, "Repeated expansions have been necessary because of the rising demand for Hollywood items. The company now takes up more than four times the space it did at first." By that time, the shop had moved into a structure on 4th Avenue and Pine Street in downtown Seattle. This facility featured a lunch counter where customers could purchase Hollywood ice cream, milk, buttermilk, sundaes, sodas, egg cocktails, etc. at any time of the day. Beyond just selling goods, the store also played a public relations function by serving as the departure point for one of the two daily round-trip stage rides out to the farm, which departed at 10 a.m. and at 5 p.m. Nellie Stimson started yet another family side company in 1918. Even before the Stimsons developed an industrial-scale greenhouse business at the farm, she had been actively interested in horticulture, first in the conservatory at their Seattle estate on Queen Anne Hill, and later in a small greenhouse in Hollywood where carnations were clearly her passion. It had 9 steam-heated greenhouses made of glass and steel, as well as a plant house, a seed house, an office, and a manager's residence. Soon, cut flowers from the carnations, roses, chrysanthemums, poinsettias, and orchids grown by staff gardeners were being transported to Seattle every day on milk wagons. At the intersection of 2nd Avenue and Stewart Street in downtown Seattle, Nellie started her own Hollywood Gardens floral business in 1918 as a result of the rising retail demand for her flowers. The bustling shop soon began providing home delivery services using bicycles, motorbikes, and a special Cadillac vehicle. Hollywood Gardens also started a wholesale operation that sent orders as far away as Honolulu, Hawaii, and Nome, Alaska. At least through the 1950s, the Seattle business would continue to be open. As Seattle and the surrounding area grew and developed, the Stimson Lumber Enterprises found it quite difficult to get its hands on old-growth timber. The Stimsons established a significant new mill on Hood Canal in 1912 in response to this fact and after noticing the enormous tract of land they had bought recently in the area. The outdated Ballard-based mill, however, would operate until 1956 when it was eventually dismantled and sold off. The Salmon Bay Center was constructed in its place and the Stimson Marina, the largest covered marina in Seattle at the time, opened its doors in 1960 at 5265 Shilshole Avenue Northwest. Frederick Stimson was still quite active. He founded a small railroad and fish cannery in Alaska in addition to working as secretary and acting attorney for the family's lumber business. He was also a regent of Washington State College of Agriculture, later Washington State University, vice president of the Washington Trust Company, and vice president of the Globe Navigation Company. At a workplace in the Globe Building at 310 First Avenue South in Seattle, he managed his numerous enterprises. To celebrate the nuptials of his daughter Axaw Stimson and her new husband Dr. Thomas Moore in 1917, Fred Stimson constructed a house close to Hollywood Farm. 100 years later, the Stimson Moore Cottage at 15844 Northwest 145th Street in Woodinville was still standing. In the small neighborhood, Axaw Stimson Moore would become well known for running the Fresh Air Farm at 156th and 160th Place Northwest in Woodinville, which, in the summer, worked with the Anti-Tuberculosis League to give undernourished kids food with lots of milk and outdoor activities. Nellie Stimson traveled to California by train with her son Harold C. Stimson for a few weeks of vacation in the fall of 1921. Frederick, who had just been re-elected as president of the Pacific International Cattle Association, developed a severe cold around the same time while at the association's exposition in Portland. He was well enough on Thanksgiving Day to start getting ready to go to the farm for a planned holiday meal. Nevertheless, Mr. Stimson was dressed for dinner, which was to be held at his Hollywood farm when he was seized by a heart attack while at the Hamilton Arms apartment. After receiving word through telegraph, his widow and son went back to their house where a funeral was held. With the assistance of Mr. Peters, Hollywood Farms' general manager, the Stimson family managed to keep it operating and even added new elements to the company. They leased the distinctive Northold Inn Hotel and Restaurant at 214-216 University Street in downtown Seattle in 1924, which had an Old English design. The Hollywood Tavern Dairy Shop was on the first floor of the structure, while the Hollywood Tavern Apartments were at the top. In the interim, there was the Hollywood Tavern Restaurant in Seattle's theater area, which served farm-fresh food and was well-loved until the family sold the operation. The Stimsons sold Hollywood Farm in 1931 because they just simply had had enough. According to local lore, the manor house was converted into the Wayward Robin Cafe, and the cellar reportedly housed an illegal speakeasy during the latter stages of Prohibition. The dairy, which was operated by Alex and Fanny Sender and their family until 1943, was one of the several areas of the property that were eventually leased off. The chicken business was renamed the Heisdorf Nelson Poultry Farm after Mort Atkinson passed away. The Nicholson family took over the Hollywood Gardens section of the land in the interim. Although she was back in Seattle when she passed away on the 16th of March 1946, Nellie Stimson continued to be a prominent socialite in Seattle after moving to Los Angeles in June of 1938. The Senders' granddaughter, Bobby Kosakoff Edelstein, recalled that by the early 1940s, the manor house had been essentially abandoned and had fallen into terrible disrepair. Blackberry vines had begun to grow into the many shattered windows that had wound throughout the building. The once beautiful structure also experienced a severe fire at some point. The Senders and Kosakoffs left the house in 1943, and Philip and Frances McBride purchased the majority of the property and started years of restoration work. Frances McBride took on the job of clearing the overgrown gardens and planting numerous new trees, including exotic examples that guests can still enjoy today. These trees include at least 62 different varieties. The property was broken up into numerous smaller portions upon her death in 1972. Wally Opdyke first became interested in the property in 1973 when he noticed the center 87-acre parcel of land that contained the manor house, the gardens, numerous historic barns, and sizable fields. He was the head of a group of local businessmen who had bought the old Seattle wine producer American Wine Growers, quickly flipped the business, and then completely sold it to the Connecticut company U.S. Tobacco. UST hired Opdyke to advise the company as it entered the new market of vineyard ownership and wine production. He had started looking around Washington for the ideal location to build a new winery and had been enticed by a few possibilities in the sunny grape-growing regions on the eastern side of the state. Yet, he had another idea. Why not construct a winery closer to Seattle, where the primary population base was, even though it made some sense to put the company there where the fruit originated? Why not construct a facility that would draw tourists and turn them into devoted consumers if the goal was to establish a new business in the Northwest? The historic Hollywood Farms pastoral setting, close to the now thriving town of Woodinville, appeared ideally located. The McBride estate received $230,000 from UST in 1974 in exchange for the site, and the company then started preparing to build a brand new St. Michelle Vintner's winery complex that would rank with the best in California or Europe. The designs called for a name change, as Opdyke explained years later. "We chose to change the name from St. Michelle Vintner's to Chateau St. Michelle. We wanted to build it to look like an old French chateau." The formal groundbreaking ceremony was held on the 27th of September, 1975, and a stunning 150,000-square-foot French-style chateau was the end result of the $6 million construction effort. According to Opdyke's forecast, the winery will be the most modern in America, and the Seattle Times described the designs as follows. The new, 600-foot-long structure will feature areas for crushing, pressing, maturing, bottling, storing, and fermenting. The two-story chateau's administrative offices, visitor center, and wine tasting area will be located next to the main entrance. By 2017, when the Chateau St. Michelle Wine Estates business, which had grown to become one of America's leading makers of premium wine, celebrated 50 years of producing wine that had won awards, Chateau St. Michelle was among the most popular wineries in the entire globe. Its vast grounds, which at the time covered 105 acres, were home to numerous old, rare trees as well as various old buildings. A popular summer music series continues to be held at a sizable outdoor amphitheater nearby the manor house, as it has been for decades. A metal historic landmark plaque was erected in 1983 in recognition of the Hollywood farm and home. 20 years later, the winery paid tribute to the history of the location once more by naming its 2006 rosé Nellie's Garden. If you're enjoying the show, please leave a 5-star review and don't forget to subscribe so that you never miss a new episode. Doing so really helps the show to grow and to expand to a new audience, so any help that you can give in that regard will be greatly appreciated. Sources for this episode include the Woodinville Historical Society, the National Register of Historic Places website, Never Far From the Trees, a history of the Stimson Lumber Company 1850-2001, the Pacific Coast Architecture Database website, the Stimson Marina website, historylink.org, the Queen Anne Historical Society website, the Washington Trust for Historic Preservation, the Seattle Times, and the New York Lumber Trade Journal. Thank you for listening to Episode 96, Woodinville's Hollywood Farm. Episode 97 will be released next week. A special thanks goes out to Al Hirsch for providing the music for the podcast. If you have any questions about the show, please contact historyoftheevergreenstatepod@gmail.com. You can also reach out to the various social media pages that the podcast has if you have any questions or want to suggest an episode. Thank you for listening to another episode of the History of the Evergreen State podcast. And until next time, I'm your host, John C.
There's peace on the Skokomish, on the Queets and on the Hoh. There's calm on the Nisqually, born of ageless ice and snow. A land that nature loves so much, she stays the whole year round. I trade a royal palace for a shack on Puget Sound. There's Chimicum and Stillicum, where spouts the gooey duck. The singing still a Guamish and the swirling Skookum Chuck. And Moclips and Copalis, where the razor clams abound. A little bit of heaven is a shack on Puget Sound. A little bit of heaven is a shack on Puget Sound.